Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Archives. Episode 41, Too Deep.
Statement of Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute, regarding exploration of the tunnels recently discovered below the archive. Statement given direct, 2nd September 2016. Statement begins. I've been going into the tunnels. Jane Prentice is dead. I know this. I have a small jar on my desk of what are supposed to be her ashes, though I don't believe it for a second. I think Martin just gave me a jar of dust to try and calm me down. Give me something to focus on for closure. I hate to say it, but it does appear to be working. A victory for the placebo effect, it would seem. But that's beside the point. The worms have been cleared and incinerated, the floors and walls repaired, and the archive looks remarkably like it was never attacked at all. Unlike me. I've healed enough in the last month to return to work, but I'm told it's unlikely the scars will ever truly fade. Tim is still signed off. Truth be told, I could have stayed away longer. Probably should have, but I don't think the boredom was good for me. I tried to come back earlier, but Martin wouldn't hear of it. Almost threw me out of the archive. Is he hiding something? No, of course not. He's probably just legitimately concerned for my health. Why do I still feel like I'm being watched? I'd just about convinced myself it was Prentice, watching me in secret while she filled the walls with her writhing hordes. But no. She is dead. And gone, and still, whenever I talk into this damn thing, I feel this... I'm being watched. I know I am. I'd think it was some aspect of the recorder itself, but it still happens even when I'm just reading these files. Not as strongly as when I'm recording them, perhaps, but still there. Is it... You know, I always despised those witnesses who rambled on, unable to stay on topic, couldn't give a concise statement. Yet here I am, mumbling my vague suspicions of being watched and completely ignoring the reason I'm making a statement of my own. I have been exploring the tunnels. It's been a couple of weeks now, from before I was officially back. If you listen to this, Martin, I'm sorry. I've gone behind your back to explore the tunnels on several occasions. I took the key from Elias's desk some time ago. I don't think he noticed. Since Martin stopped living in the archives, I've had ample opportunities for exploration by night. Part of me still wonders if going down there after dark was more dangerous, but the pitch black of those tunnels would be no different in the daytime. The only light down there is what you bring yourself. The first time I attempted to explore them, I had no idea. I brought one torch, and that was it. The lights in the archive were off when I arrived at the Institute. I hadn't been down here since it was full of worm carcasses. I'd never explored down here by torchlight, and the shadows were starker than I had anticipated. Every time I walked between the shelves, I swear I would see movement out of the corner of my eye. But when I turned, there was nothing. Obviously, there was nothing. Then I came to the trapdoor. If Sasha hadn't thought to clearly mark it with hazard tape, I'm not sure I would ever have found it again. But there it was. It took several minutes of fumbling before I was able to figure out how to lift the concealed handle and expose the lock, but I managed it. The key turned with a click that I found oddly satisfying, and I pulled it open. When I had thought about that moment before, I had always imagined it groaning open with a tortured, ominous creak. But it was almost silent. It glided open as though on freshly oiled hinges, with only the faintest puff of stagnant air being released from beneath it. The opening was utterly black, with the faintest hint of decay in the cold, clammy air that rushed out of it. The stairs down it were steep, far steeper than I remembered them from when I had first climbed out. But those memories are unreliable, and tinged with other, more potent experiences. I turned the torch on and was pleased by how easily it penetrated the darkness, illuminating the rough grey stone below. I was expecting my torch to be met by hundreds of decaying worm husks, but the passage seemed to be empty. I headed down into the tunnel, closing the trap door behind me. It is hard to put into words how it felt to be down there in the cool, mouldering air of the tunnels. Have you ever left a crowded room and literally felt the silence as you walked out into the night? It was something like that, a sudden, quiet absence. Not in itself a fearful thing, but unsettling, in a way I hadn't noticed through the fear and adrenaline of my first time in the tunnels. I took a moment to examine the feeling, but couldn't trace it to anything obvious, so I began to explore. It was almost unreal how quickly I became lost. I generally consider myself to have an excellent sense of direction, but within minutes I became unsure of exactly which passages I had come from. I didn't even have the excuse of the corridors all looking the same, as they varied significantly in height and construction. Some were built of sturdy brick. Some seemed almost as though they had formed naturally, though in all cases it was the same dull, grey stone. To call it a maze wouldn't quite be accurate, as a maze is designed. It is set out with an obvious goal, even if that goal is to confuse and disorientate. This place, it felt, more organic in its unpredictability, as though it had been intended to be used, to be travelled, but had gotten twisted somehow. I found spaces that seemed intended as rooms, but without doors. Elsewhere there were doors that seemed simply attached to the walls. Most of these were firmly shut, though some opened to reveal the flat grey stone behind. Only a handful I opened had actual rooms behind them, and in every case I found myself wondering whether that was where Martin had found her. There was no way to tell. Even when the police finally found Gertrude's body, they took it, chair and all, as well as all the tapes. Evidence, they said. And they might be right, though I don't envy them the task of going through all of them. There must have been hundreds. No. I suppose in some way I do envy them. They are an insight into my predecessor's time here, something I desperately want to know more about. Whatever's on them, it must be important, because either she chose to hide them down here, or whoever killed her did. Either way, I have a feeling it isn't something the police are going to understand. I half hoped to stumble across a lone cassette lying in one of the corridors, dropped and overlooked, but there was nothing. Just dark and empty tunnels. Silent and unwelcoming. I foolishly didn't think to make a note of the time I entered the tunnels, so it was hard to say how long I had been down there, or how far I had gone when I found the first of the worms. But it can't have been more than a half hour. They were long dead by then. Shriveled, stringy things like discarded sausage casing. And it was odd to see how clear a line there was between the wormless tunnels and those where they lay rotting. A clear line beyond which the cleaning crews had decided not to advance. When I crossed that line, I half expected the corpses to spring to life, turning their squirming heads towards me with a predatory lunge. But they were still. Nonetheless, I went slower through those deeper passages, picking my footing carefully so as not to touch them. The air was colder here, suffused with the faint tang of rot. I began to wonder how much battery I had in my torch. I had put a fresh one in before my expedition, I'm not stupid. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized that I don't actually know how long batteries last for continuous use in a heavy-duty torch. I hadn't even been down there an hour, but already it felt like the light it cast was weaker, somehow. And I realized how unsure I was of my exact route back. I decided I would rather cut my first trip unnecessarily short than risk being trapped down there without light. So I turned back. It was almost impossible to retrace my steps. I tried to remember my route using what vague oddities I could remember as landmarks, a burned door, a particularly warped corridor. But trying to find them again was useless in the winding passages. In my increasing panic to find the way out, I almost forgot the things I had originally gone down there to look for. Then I found the circle of worms. When Tim had first described it, I had only half believed him. "I'm sorry, Tim, if you're listening, but the CO2 had done some strange things to you at that point." He had the right of it, though. By the time I found it, there was little left but a thick carpet of dead worms, but a few were still embedded in the wall, providing the clear outline of a circle. The ceiling was higher here, and all told it must have been about 10 feet in diameter. Its size was not the most disconcerting thing, though. Inside the circle, the stone was wrong, somehow. Solid, but oddly wavy. Like chocolate that's melted and then rehardened. It took me a minute or two to work up the courage to wade through that shallow sea of filth, but I did. And when I touched the warped wall, it felt soft and porous. Was stable. I turned and left, but not before noting that another path also appeared to have been pushed through the worms on the floor, though when it had happened or who had made it, I couldn't say. It took me almost another hour to find the trapdoor again. My torch showed no signs of giving up, but I was still on the verge of panic. My hands were so slick with sweat that I fumbled several times with the handle before finally pushing it open bodily and falling